Good morning. Welcome to Lawyer v. Lawyer. Hello, Gary.
Good morning, Debbie. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great.
It's hot outside this
week.
It's still hot. It is 113 heat index.
It's crazy. It's the earliest we've ever had this kind of a heat index forever.
It doesn't bode well for this summer.
Right.
But you kind of have a tan. I just don't.
I ignore the sun now. I'm old, I'm fair, and I like wear hats, and I go to a dermatologist, and I have these things I put on my arms to block the sun. I wear a hat wherever I go. My kids mock me because I look like some old.
You all look old.
And then I get cold. Then I go in the air conditioner. I get cold, and I bring cardigan sweaters. No, I bring like shirts and stuff because I get cold. I'm like an old man all of a sudden.
I'm just thankful we're in an air conditioned building.
Sometimes do we sound like, can I ask Jennifer a question? Yeah. Do we sound like an old married couple? Sometimes when we talk,
fight on the podcast.
No, because these aren't real fights. Married couples actually fight, right?
Congratulations on your marriage.
Yes, Tracy. That's right. So,
do you want to introduce our guest
for
again for a second?
So we
back,
have Jennifer
time?
Matthew, previously Jennifer Matthew, Jennifer Crompton. She is back from Lexitas. And I had asked her to come back because I wanted to hear some stories about our kind appearing in depositions and mediations and such, and things that lawyers have done that would maybe hopefully surprise the rest of us, or if not, at least entertain us. So welcome, Jennifer. Thanks for returning.
Yes, thank you for having me again.
So, you know, you like this, pet peeves. We've done a couple of these on different things. We've done them on trials and different stuff. But you know, we've never done, Debbie, and Jennifer gave us this idea, was to do pet peeves and mediation and maybe depots, which is her world. Just as a reminder, Jennifer, tell me who you're with real quick and what you all do.
Sure. So I'm with Lexitas. I'm the director, director of ADR and counsel is my title. And we have our headquarters here in St. Louis. We have 7 offices in Missouri and 1 in Illinois and 1 in Arkansas. But our company is based out of Texas. So we also do court reporting. And then also have a trial division, our little business unit specifically.
And you're a trial lawyer for a decade and a half before that and stuff, so you know this space really well. You probably tried more cases than me. So can we do pet peeves? Who should we start?
Why don't we start with
Jennifer?
She's probably got good ones.
Yeah,
she has seen way more.
The
than
ones she can talk about, because some of your stuff's protect. You let's be clear. We all three of us take our confidentiality obligations to our clients and in mediation seriously. But there are ways for us to communicate about pet peeves as a way to educate people, right?
Absolutely. And maybe we shouldn't call it pet peeves per se, but maybe like best practices. That's what lawyers like
to say.
That's
good.
So try to avoid doing these pitfalls.
Change the title of this. Of this podcast.
No, like for example, Tom Stewart did a webinar for us earlier this year, I think it was, and it was basically pet peeves and special master type stuff, right? Because you can imagine what's going on there, right?
Yeah.
And he says, let's rename that. And I think it was like basically pitfalls to avoid. And I was like, you're so PC, Tom. So anyway, I'm just joking with you.
That's smart. Funny. Best practices
what
in
to
mediation.
Avoid doing kind of thing.
Give us one that you see, you could.
Well, I'll talk. There's so many. I have just a different vantage point, right? Because my seat on the bus is different. I'm not advocating. I'm not mediating. I'm just, you know, running the business side of it. But one thing I would say is we are all procrastinators. And this is a big one. And actually, it just happened this week where we got an email from one of the lawyers on a mediation at 7 a.m. And it was a 9 a.m. mediation. And with his whole,
history.
His or her entire case, you know, exhibits attached, all this jazz. And it's like, I've just been busy. I don't know if you try cases, do you expect your judge to read what your supporting documentation before you argue your motion? Of course you do. So I don't know if that mediator was able to read it. I think he or she was, but that's not enough time, right? It also shows a lack of care in some ways.
You know, the other reason why that's bad is because when you're presenting your case, I have a rule in my firm. Since the pandemic, we have more. So I have a rule that we send that out 10 days before, because who are you trying to persuade? The mediator doesn't care. You're not going to persuade him. You're trying to say to the other side, right? And in your experience, Jennifer, can either a plaintiff or defendant adjust their valuation of the case in an hour based on an email?
I mean, I wouldn't think so. I also, you bring up a good point. I don't know if you do this, but some plaintiffs, I think attorneys more so than defense, will send everything to the other side.
Always, every time.
You do that. Okay, I've been doing that.
Because who cares? That's who you want to persuade, and they got to run it up committees. And a defense lawyer like Debbie needs ammo to give to her people so that they can digest it. What do you think about that, Debbie?
You know, I never give it beforehand. Ever.
But what about the other side?
That's what I mean. I never give it to the other side. I always get it to my mediator. So my general theory on how do I get a case settled is I talk about worst case scenario with my client. But to the other side, the mediator, I talk about my best case scenario. It's a pet peeve of mine when other people don't do that, because it's the only way we can get to the same number.
How do you lobby the plaintiff if you are not... How do you lobby the plaintiff on a lower value in the case? How do you communicate that?
I generally do not do it in person anymore because it doesn't... It doesn't work, so I have to do it through the mediator. You know, we used to have these meetings, pre-mediator meetings, which really we don't have anymore. But if I were to tell a plaintiff that, or a plaintiff's attorney, they're just mad at me for talking about it. So I just try to do it through the mediator, let the mediator tell my, at least I'll put it this way, through the first 2 hours of the mediation, and then the rest of it's just negotiation. But it... I mean, we're skipping to one of my pet peeves, but
that's a good dialogue about timing and when to present things to mediators. Yeah. Thank you, Jennifer.
One of my pet peeves is the plaintiff's attorney overselling his case to his client because he wants to look strong and he can't get out of that situation. So then when that attorney turns and says, no, we need to settle because of A, B, and C, then now the plaintiff doesn't believe him or her because he's oversold it the entire time, but particularly at the beginning of the mediation. And so 3 hours ago, you just said this was a $3.5 million case, and now you're telling me I should take $400,000. What are you talking about? And I get that. If you hear somebody you're relying on way oversell the case and then try to talk you into something else.
So I think managing client expectations is a huge,
yeah,
I don't want to say complaint, but issue that I hear about all the time. I could, not to name names, but like Tom Plunkett and I talk about this, right? Because if you, as the mediator, that's difficult for him, right? It's putting him in a box because,
right,
if your client thinks, in your example, you know, I'm not going to take that lower amount. That's ridiculous. You told me this case was worth this. He's like, I can't get this case settled. You know what I mean?
Right.
Maybe he can.
Right.
But that makes his job even that much more difficult.
And it's fine to tell him you're going to ask for it. Look, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go in. I'm going to ask for this because if we were to hit the best case that day, maybe we could get this, but they're not going to pay that. They're going to pay you somewhere around here. But here's what we're going to fight for. Well, okay, that's a different issue. You've got somebody fighting for more than you are going to get. They like that. Then they'll trust you.
Well, and along those lines, Tom and I, again, we gave a presentation on this whole topic. I forgot about that like last year.
That's
one of his other ones, and Tom is very blunt, if you all know Tom, and he's great. But he said, basically, you shouldn't be meeting your client for the first time at the mediation. Like, that's a recipe for disaster.
That's hilarious.
And even that kind of tongue-in-cheek, right? But, I mean, it's true. You need to have a rapport with them, and that part of that client management is meeting with them before, talking about what you're doing, and then also the numbers might matter, and what you're going to ask for matters. But yeah, you can't have your first meeting with them be either in person or on Zoom, for that matter, at a mediation.
I concur with everything you guys have said. It's a wimpy and unfair position to put the mediator in to be the first person that where the client has ever heard bad news, because the client has. There's so much more work in the mediation to move from 3.5 million to 400. There's a lot of inertia there. There's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of dashed expectations and stuff. And there's already a disadvantage to the plaintiff in a mediation in terms of risk tolerance. You know, insurance companies are very risk tolerant. A single plaintiff with one claim is not. And I've done speeches on this, and I've done CLEs on this too. So the client is already in a pressure cooker. And what the plaintiff's attorney's job is to do is to equalize the playing field, to stand up to the insurance company so that you don't impose additional stress on the claimant. And that's in doing what this is your pet peeve, Deb, is exactly the opposite of what you should be doing. So I always talk to my clients, We talk about expectation, managing expectations all the time, and it's a stupid maneuver by the plaintiff's lawyer because then they just vilify the mediator. I do the opposite. My mediator is my buddy, and I take advice and have good relationships, and I want to have that mediator want to carry my water, want to do that in the other room and be my ally versus going, oh, great, I'm going to be the bad guy. It's, you know. So I do the exact opposite, and that's fair to the client. And I think it's not an ethics violation, but you have a duty. You're looking, if you're doing that, you're looking out for your own interests ahead of your client's interests, your own interests at avoiding the expectations conflict with your client rather than with your client's. Your client is better served by saying, listen, here's the deal. You know, I'm going to ask for 3.5, but, you know, there's a lot of defense verdicts in these kind of cases, and you may only get 400 and blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. And I know the reality is when Debbie comes in, she's not going to offer half a 3.5. So we need to get our expectations in line. Because then you need, and I know I'm talking for a minute, sorry about that, but then you need to talk about where the liens break down. What's going to go in your pocket at 400? Where is this going to go? How are you going to live your life? Having a client make that decision in one meeting on one day is tough, man. You gotta be working on these lien holders when you walk into the mediation. And you need to, I have a chart in every mediation. I share it with my client. I have a Word document. I say, here's the settlement amount. Here's my fees, expenses. Here's the liens. And this is what you get in your pocket. The client doesn't care about 3.5 or 400. That's they care about what's in their pocket.
That's
ready to tell them all the time. And that can segue into my pet peeve. So I echo everything you guys say for a whole host of reasons. You have to have that hard conversation with your client going in. Debbie, just like you're, because the defense lawyer is having their hard, should be having like you do. You have your hard conversation with your client, which is what you just said. Sorry to go on. But
and
yeah,
sometimes
there's a lot
you're
of
in
reasons.
A situation where the client disagrees with you. The client's not going to give you what you asked for. But it's in their file. You know what you evaluated it at. You know where you are. They know where you are. And if you have to go to trial and you bring it in for less than what you said, but more than what they said, well, I consider that a win.
And it's stupid because for the plaintiff's lawyer, because what you do is you set your client to say, listen, maybe we'll have to take two or 250. Then when you get them 400, they think you're a hero and
that's
they give
right.
you a great Google
that's
review.
Right.
And then they're your advocate to the world.
That's right. That's exactly right. As opposed to mad, upset, or against you, you know, actively fighting you to try that case.
Yeah. I was going to say, too, I don't know if you've ever meted with Judge Stack, Dan Stack, either.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So he always starts his mediations that I'm aware of with a calculation, a formula. That he sends, usually if it's on Zoom, I'm seeing it because I'm in there sometimes with him, but or in person. And he says, you sit down and you work on yours and you work on yours. And it's kind of a best and worst case scenario type exercise. It's really interesting. And at first I thought, what is this, you know? But I actually I watched one that he did a while ago. I shadowed him pre-COVID, I think. But anyway, and it was really interesting to see kind of the sort of change. And I don't know these people, but like the dynamic, especially with the plaintiff, seeing, okay, what is it, every one time out of 10, this might happen, 9 times out of 10, this might happen. This is the jury where the jury could go with these numbers and what's your sort of middle of the road number and that's what we're going to hone in on. Not up here and we're not down here. It's really interesting calculation.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
Just thought I would mention
that's good though.
Yeah.
That's good he makes them focus on that.
Yeah.
So, all right, Gary, how about you? What's your thought?
Well, if you're looking at my sheet, my first one is not prepared, if you can read my handwriting. And that, so I think I'm echoing what you guys, but I have had so many mediations where people haven't, you got to call Medicare, you got to call Medicaid, you got to get your lien situation,
you
got to
be
doing all that. I hate it when we're not ready to go.
Yeah.
And we always are, but I've seen it when there's multiple plaintiffs in a mediation, when there's multiple parties, that kind of stuff. And we're and people in mediation say, no, I think I'm going to call the lien holder, that kind of stuff. You know, well, hello. And then, you know, on the defense side, on the other side, I see, you know, defense lawyers like, well, did you give me this and this? And so I find myself in mediations pulling documents, highlighting them, emailing them to the defense lawyer and the mediator in real time saying, well, look at this. Well, look at this. Well, look at this. So that's that. And then let me just add one little, it's a little bit separate, but it's a preparation thing too. Is my pet peeve is never talking about confidentiality till the very end of the mediation.
Yeah, that happens a lot.
I can't stand it because I don't agree to confidentiality a lot because I like to talk about myself.
You mean as a term of the agreement?
Yes.
And you don't get to that until you're at the agreement
stage.
At the
end, all right, the number's this. Now I'm like, no. So I have a pre-mediate. A lot of times I'll say no confidentiality. I bring it up before anybody else. Yeah. I say there's none. And I have a joke about it, too. And I talk about myself. But I say, they say, why no confidentiality? I say, because I'm doing a newsletter on Monday and I need to put something in. And they're like, you're going to put this? Yes. Let's talk about exactly how we're going to talk about this case down the road. And it's the same issue. It's akin to what we were talking about before with talking about the client and their expectations. I want my client to know right then what their obligation is in the future. I've never had anybody sued for confidentiality, but let's have this crystal clear.
Yeah.
So we're done and we're over, and there's no collateral litigation a year from now when it's in my newsletter or something. So what do you guys say? I kind of threw out both things to you all, preparation and confidentiality.
Preparation is key. I mean, I don't think that anybody would argue about that. The problem is some people don't know how to prepare, and they don't know whether or not they're prepared. They just don't know what they're doing.
That's a good segue. One of my big points on here is just the word communication. And so that is, again, I have a different seat on the bus a little bit.
Yeah.
But communication amongst opposing counsel, right? That's key. You have to communicate with each other. You have to know why you're there, what you're planning to do that day. And if there's multiple plaintiffs, multiple defendants especially, that seems to come up. My favorite, I think you had one recently, I don't know if I can talk about it, but where you were like, I'm just sitting here. I don't even have money to give.
That's true.
You were so funny, and so we got to chat. But that happens sometimes. You're just like a warm body. Or other times you are like the main figure that's involved in it, heated, you know? And so that's a big deal for the mediator especially, to walk in and know that y'all have talked to each other at least briefly. And this can't be a surprise. And I can always tell when those go bad because we'll get a timesheet that's like less than an hour. And I'm like, they didn't even have time to do proper introductions.
Right.
Like, how could it be 45 minutes?
Right.
So that's bad. And then my other flip side of the communication is with our office. And I just say this because I'm in this every day. I'm in our inbox. And it's frustrating when the lawyers won't respond to you or their staff won't respond at all.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it happens. I mean, not everybody, but if we're talking about best practices, just respond, you know? Or if you maybe missed an email from us or you're waiting on something, just reach out. Like, that's perfectly
interesting
fine.
That you guys don't hear back from, because you would think if people have agreed to a mediation,
right,
they'd want to go ahead and get it scheduled and get it done.
Well, it's not even the scheduling portion. It's almost usually aftermath where we need a signed agreement.
Oh,
we
right.
must have that agreement in hand to proceed. And it's just, and sometimes it is scheduling, you're right. It's just tricky. I don't know. And sometimes I feel like I'm caught in this game. If it's me that's emailing, let's say with you here, and you're like, you're going to have to get that information from Debbie. And I'm like, oh, okay. Well, do you have it? You know, it's just this weird, like jockeying sometimes almost.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is, but that the communication amongst all parties is tricky. And I know that people just generally, you guys have probably talked about this in your podcast. People just don't read.
Communication's tougher during the pandemic.
Yeah.
That's a really good point. I mean, you're going to a mediation. You want to make sure the defense lawyer has, do you have the last round of PT records? Do you have the updated bill? Do you know what's the liens? Let me tell you what the liens. And you can, I'm frankly not going to tell you my bill versus pay sheet. But I have it.
That's right. Why would you tell me that? Let me
figure
it out. You can correct it if I'm wrong.
Exactly. But I know what it is. It's not like
this
is the... Because you know about the third, fourth session in there, you're going to talk about what the real medical is in the case.
That's right.
Do you think, Jennifer, can I do a follow-up question?
Yeah.
So what challenges, what pet peeves do you see in communication? Do you see the parties not... being unwilling? There's already enough problems trying to settle a case. Why aren't people communicating? You think they're lazy? You think they're trying to hide their cards? What do you see?
That's tough for me because, again, my vantage point. But we sometimes get drug into, I'll say, battles with opposing counsel, email battles. I have one recently where they were accusing the other side of bad faith. Like, you never intended to mediate. This is BS, basically, you know, and we're not paying for this, and we're not, because they canceled it, like, the day before or something, or the week before. And, you know, we have fees that are due up front. And so that was sort of where this fight came from. And they're accusing bad faith against the defense. And this was a multi-plaintiff case, many plaintiffs. And so I'm not going to get involved in that. You know what I mean? And I don't expect my staff to get involved in that argument. But had they communicated, and I don't know this case, right? I know the people. I know the players. I know the lawyers. But
who is it? Go ahead. Tell us everybody's names.
Don't do it. We'll get calls.
Oh, my gosh. You're baiting me.
That's funny.
But, no, it's tricky, right? And so Debbie and I have talked about this before, too, where there'll be an email exchange different from the one I just mentioned where they're, after the fact, alleging bad faith. You didn't come to the mediation in good faith. you know, mediator so-and-so, you shouldn't sign that form that for the federal court that says that they acted in good faith. I want you to not check that box, and I'm filing this motion, I'm taking it up with the judge, and it's, I mean, it's like it blows up in your face. And my staff is, you know, these are administrative assistants. They're like, oh my gosh, what's going on? I'm like, don't worry about it. You know, please take us off your email exchange. But we get put in the middle, I guess, quite a bit. So it's just interesting.
It is interesting.
I never thought about doing that for you guys, because I would think it's more of a laziness thing where you're on the email, the other side's on the email, and they're just writing back and forth.
Sometimes that does happen. Yeah. Absolutely.
But that's kind of ridiculous.
It is, because it should be between the lawyers. So sometimes you will have a conversation with the other lawyer walking into a mediation. And for what I'll call the other lawyer and I'll say, listen, we're going in this mediation. I just want to make sure that we're going to not, you know, why would we walk into a mediation and the defense sort of say, it's a defense verdict, I'm going to offer you $5,000. If that's the case, tell me now.
Beforehand, why are we spending that much money to go mediate?
Why are we doing this? Why? So.
But sometimes, to take up for my own side.
Sometimes
we don't have the money. Sometimes they will not give us the money and they want to go to mediation. You go to mediation, they tell you they're going to offer $5,000. So it's really frustrating to me, too, when that happens.
But
not within my control.
I didn't mean to interrupt you.
That's okay.
But if I call you and we're walking to a mediation,
yeah,
you're not going to tell. I you have this conversation. We say, listen, I know you're. Don't tell me what your final number is in the mediation. If there's some curveballs here, if there's things, you know, tell me so that I can talk to my client about it, so that we're not really disappointed at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And would you have that conversation with the plaintiff's lawyer?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
You have a good relationship with all these plaintiff's lawyers.
If I knew what my authority, so many times, Gary, they don't tell me what the authority is till we get a mediation. But if I have authority, oh heck, I'd just rather just settle it if we can. And if we can't, then I certainly would have that conversation.
Have you been accused? You may not want to answer. Have you been accused of bad faith? Have you been in this position like she just described?
I don't think so. But I don't remember that ever happening. However,
me neither.
There have been some times where I thought, my dang client didn't show him good faith. And so whether or not the other attorney said it too, and I'm agreeing, I don't know. I don't remember ever thinking in a case somebody accused me of that. But I have thought before, I'm in this mediation and we should not be here, and I don't think my client read my stuff. I've had that happen.
Yeah, I guess I've had the other side go way low, and then I sit there and I go, you know, sometimes you don't have time to make the call, you know?
Yeah. Sometimes if it is really different, you just sometimes can have disagreements. But the issue is, do you and your client, have you all talked enough to get the authority on the file that needs to be there?
All right, Debbie, your turn for a best practice in mediation and deposition.
Best practice is if you don't understand brackets, do not talk about brackets. Drives me crazy when somebody does an entire bracket and then it turns out they're not sending the right signal at all. And the mediators bend over backwards to try to explain it to them and they don't. And then at the end of the day, you're where you think you all were going to be and you're nowhere near where you are supposed to be.
That is funny. Has that happened to you?
Oh, all the time.
Really?
And the thing that really happened, because I just laugh because you generally know the other side. You generally know whether or not this person knows what they're doing. And it's happened to me over and over and over again. And the mediator comes in just apoplectic. They're just beside themselves because they didn't see it coming. And I'll sometimes say, you know, I don't think they are going to get this. I see where we're going. You see where we're going. They think they're at that top number and that's where they are. They don't get it. They do not get it. And the mediator will usually say, oh, no, no, I've explained it. And then at the end of the day, they come back in and say, well, I won't say what they say. But they're really upset.
Bleep, bleep, bleep. Yeah.
It is one of the funniest things that happens, though. They get so mad over that.
You know what I do sometimes? It's like, let's say you're going to bracket around 100. So that as an example.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So the mediator comes to me and goes, I go, yeah, I'll propose a bracket, 95 and 105. I mean, it's not that.
That's okay.
I mean, but that's the joke to prove the point is when you bracket, you're talking midpoints,
not the numbers, which is
the point you're making.
And they try really hard to explain it to the person.
Right.
Whatever.
Right.
I'm sorry to hear that. I'm sure that did not happen at our office.
It's happened everywhere. All right, Jennifer, my question to you, though, is I want to know something funny that has happened, something gossipy that we can't talk about people's names. Are there weird things that happen in mediation that, like, Gary and I would maybe not
know? I don't know about weird in mediation, per se, but weird at Alaris, now Lexitas. Like, over the years, there's just been weird things that have occurred. some I cannot talk about. But one we were kind of joking about earlier. Well, this one's just funny. This, it was a mediation. We have a no-smoking policy in our building, as do, I think, every building.
Every building downtown.
That I'm aware of, yeah. And this woman who was, I believe, was the was a plaintiff. Layperson was just smoking away, vaping away in our office, and that is not allowed.
And, so, and you're like going, what?
Yeah, so I hear about this because I'm in my office. I come down and I hear about it, and our receptionist is, you know, like, I don't know what to do. So she tells the lawyer, and the lawyer says, well, it doesn't say no vaping anywhere.
That's hilarious.
So, and so she continued vaping.
It also says don't set the room on fire, but there are just some things.
Right,
that
some things are just understood, yeah. So that happened. And one other one we're kind of joking about, too, is that people sometimes have been drinking before they come into our office. Like in the morning, you can smell it and you can tell.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, that's not advisable.
So so when your mediators do that, do they keep working for
you? Oh, my God. Funny, not them.
Pretty good, Gary.
It's not them. That would be terrible. No, but it's awkward because again, I'm not mediating the case, but you know, this person's clearly under the influence, and so you got to deal with that.
I mediated a case. I'm not going to say when, at your facility, where my client was falling asleep for long periods of time, sitting down with the mediator present in the room.
Oh my gosh.
Now, it was relating to taking a bunch of pain medication because of the pain he was in, but it was really, really tough, and it negatively affected the mediation. And the mediator was such a pro and so good that she handled it very, very well. Thank God.
It is tough, though. I mean, think about that. Why do people drink? They drink because they're nervous or worried or whatever.
Or they're alcoholics.
Or both, yeah. And
especially in the morning. That's a bigger deal.
It's a big deal,
and
I
this
agree.
Is a big stressor for people. We forget that. You know, how many mediations do I go to a year? A ton. Am I nervous about them? Never. Why? Because I have control over whether it settles or not. But they don't get it. You know, they don't get it. Or maybe you're working with an attorney who's been drinking, and they realize, if I don't get this case settled, I'm going to get sued because I did this wrong, or I'm not going to keep my lights on, or whatever. They're just nervous about it. And so I get it. I mean, I can see people drinking. I don't drink anymore. But I'm just saying, I can get it. I get why people might drink because they're nervous. But it doesn't help a mediation.
I think for a lawyer that's drinking, where it gets tricky, well, it's tricky in and of itself, but if you can tell that, again, they're under the influence in the morning, and let's say they're in a room by themselves on Zoom, do you have an obligation to do something, say something? I mean, this is tricky. This is what,
you know, can you do?
Right.
But you know, Jennifer, I remember, and Gary, I'm sure you do too. Let's just put it back 30 years ago. Well, you would go to trial, and the attorneys would be drinking, especially after lunch. Do you remember that?
Well, yeah.
He's looking funny.
Well, you're talking. Well, you don't know this about me. Well, you also, they would call when the jury was out. The lawyers would go drink, and they'd call the bar, and the bar would answer it and give it to show. I know. I know many lawyers who did that. You happen to have on this podcast me, and I am a member. I don't know if they ever told you that I'm on the Supreme Court Intervention Committee. I'm a longtime chairman of MOLAP, and I try to do work to help addicted lawyers, because the incidence of alcoholism and drug addiction in our profession is 2 to 3 times the population.
It's
and
bad.
The ABA study, the most recent one about 15 years ago, the crazy thing is that lawyers with more than 20 years experience in the profession, the incidence went up. And so you think that people figure it out and become sober.
You
but
think it's young
happen.
Kids who just
so
are starting to
So it's a
to
problem
learn.
In our industry. It's a problem with lawyers. We are a high-stress conflict. We're a self-selecting population of people who go to law school. So there's there's a lot of reasons. But if anybody happens to be listening towards the tail end of this podcast, if you know something, say something. MOLAP is confidential. The intervention committee is confidential. If you're not telling on the person who's drunk, you're enabling them, and you don't want to do it. And it's the hardest thing to do. But pick, you may change that lawyer's life. You may change their life for their family and them. Maybe you won't, because you can't make them stop. But maybe you will. Sorry to get off on a tangent.
No, I completely agree with you. And I'm actually involved with the Missouri Bar. I'm on the Board of Governors, and I know about your work with MoLAP, and it's okay. Awesome. I mean, I personally have witnessed these things, the one I'm talking about. You know, it was a person that was intoxicated at our office, and I thought, what do I do? What obligation
no one
do
knows.
I have?
No one
you know,
knows.
Can that's
I let him drive his
point.
Car? I'm not his mother, but can I he or she drive their car? I mean, do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, this is
it's interesting
what goes
to
my
hear
mind.
That, because of the three of us, I'm the oldest, and I grew up in a period of time where people went around impaired a lot more frequently. And so I don't think about that. I really don't. And you heard what I just said. I'm kind of trying to enable them, giving them a reason for drinking in the morning because
the pandemic made it worse.
Oh, it absolutely. Did make it really bad from what I hear.
We're almost, can I pivot just to, do you have a funny story? You asked Jennifer about a funny story in mediation.
Oh, I probably have a bunch.
Do you have one or no?
I don't think
can
it's
I,
funny.
Can I tell you?
Please but go. Do. Yeah, I don't think my stories are funny. They're more sad. You tell your funny stories because I don't have anything to end on a laugh.
Well, this isn't. Can I tell a deposition funny story? So, before
let me look at the rules.
Before
yes,
Zoom,
apparently rule
before
number four
Zoom,
says.
I would go. I film all my depositions so I can play them at trial rather than calling someone hostile across. So I'd have my little camcorder. And it was the cheapest piece of crap. It was a Sony camcorder because if you buy a big expensive one, you're going to have the bandwidth. You can't play it at trial because you have all this data.
Oh, funny.
But it's got to be big enough. And I have this little thing in this little stand. So I'm in it. My friend and opponent, Dan Wilkie, I don't think would mind because this was on the record. I'm filming this deposition. Dan, in the deposition, produces to me another $1 million in insurance coverage in the case. And he hands it to me. We mark it as an exhibit. And I've had a lot of cases. And I know Dan, he got it yesterday.
Right.
And he told
you just
me. And he told me.
All the time.
And so I take my camp, and there was a bunch of young lawyers in the room because we were suing a bunch of people as a debt collapse case. And I turn the camera and I focus it on Dan. And I say, Dan, are you telling me that you're producing to me another $1 million policy in this case? And he looks at the camera and he holds it up and he starts cussing at me. And in a funny way, and all the mouths in the lawyers in the room are their jaws on the ground, and I just start laughing because I know because I was giving him shit. I'm cussing on this. I was giving him trouble by getting in his face, putting a thing, and he was right back at me. He's like, bring it on, buddy. And it was the funniest moment in a depo. And of course, my court reporter knows to stop.
I was going
to
say, the court reporter's like, do I?
I've had my same court reporter for 30 years, Karen Russo, who's great. And anyway, but it was a real, it's one of those moments
Karen
that stick
great.
With me that is, it was just so funny.
That is
and
funny.
I joke around with him, and he's a great lawyer, good opponent. So
I don't have this really, but all of my male associates or partners talk about people who want to take a swipe at them in deposition.
Take a swipe at who?
At whoever the male associate or male partner.
Like a personal
right.
swipe?
Like
yeah,
a personal
punch.
Physical.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Some people still want to come to blows over things.
Thank God for Zoom now, right?
I know, it's crazy. I will say nobody's ever wanted to strike me. They may have wanted to. They haven't threatened it.
That's insane.
I know.
Jennifer, have you guys have anything like that at your facility?
I'm sure over the years, certainly. I have not witnessed anything physical. I have definitely heard yelling, door slamming. We have a lot of doors, you know, and it's kind of loud. People storming out of our office. I've seen out my window a lawyer chase down another lawyer to bring him back in. Like, no, don't leave!
Oh,
don't leave!
Funny.
And I see what's happening, but I don't know really what's happening.
Remember when we would walk from deposition, from mediations, pack up your stuff and be walking out, and they say, no, come back in. Has Zoom killed that?
I don't know if it's killed it. We still have, you know, I mentioned my stat earlier, or that was our previous podcast, 75%-ish of our cases involve Zoom, but that doesn't mean that they're usually in person as well. You know what I mean? So some portion of that used Zoom, so it could just be the adjuster.
Yeah, it could
everybody
just be
else is in person.
What percentage of your cases settle in mediation? Do you not want to say,
or
do you know?
It's just tricky. I do know. It's just tricky because it varies tremendously. I wish I could say 100, but it's not that high.
No.
But that's not a number that we
You want to put us out of business.
Share. No.
That's
I
not
love
a number
it when
you
y'all,
share.
I
all
love
right.
it when y'all settle. Trust me. That's like makes my day. We have a sweep. Like if we have five mediations and they all settle.
One other question. Can I ask it? And we're going to go a little bit long. Here's. Do you have an issue of people not paying? Because can we talk about that or no?
We can.
Because Adam one time shared with me, it is my expectation when I hire court reporters and mediators that I pay them. I pay them up front. They're not my bank. They're not my credit card company. Is that an issue that you guys encounter?
The short answer is yes. I will say the vast majority of our clients, you guys in this room especially, you know, they pay their bills. There are the outliers. And that's something that was a lesson for me when I started in this new position, right? Because before where I worked, you pay your vendors, you pay
your
bills.
Is that a pet peeve of yours?
It's not a pet peeve, but here's something that I don't think people know. You're not stiffing Judge David or Judge Wallace or Tom Plunkett or whoever. You're stiffing us because we guarantee payment to them. Mm-hmm. We pay them net 30. So within 30 days of your mediation, they're paid. Mm-hmm. We are the ones that are out that money. And mm-hmm. so we're running a business, right? And mm-hmm. I have to account for everything. And every time that something has to be either written off or, you know, moved to collections or wherever that's going to go, that affects our bottom line. And that's hard because we are not going to stiff the mediator. We would never do that.
Right.
So that's
something hard.
Yeah. Because
right. It's hard to deal with that because you also don't want to alienate the lawyer. It may be a good lawyer who it just running a business as a cash flow.
And well, in like defense attorneys, we are slow pay because so many of our clients want to pay the bill if it's over a certain amount. So you send it to the client ignores it. Send it to the client ignores it. Finally, three or four times later, we're like, all right, we're paying this. If you don't pay it, they finally pay it. Or sometimes we pay.
Well, and I think that's something that's come up recently to your question as a whole, not just ADR, but at what point do we go back to our client, which is you, Debbie,
yeah.
or you, and we say, you're our client. I'm sorry. I don't
that's
care
right.
about, you know, so-and-so
right.
insurance company, and that you're our client. Our agreement is with you,
that's
not
right.
with them.
Ultimately,
and that's
we need
tricky.
To be paying that.
Correct.
It, as a business, do you guys decide not to do business with certain people who habitually do that, or should I not ask that question?
No, we try very hard not to do that. Very hard. I can speak for ADR because, again, these clients are the clients of our neutrals. They're not my clients, right?
Ooh, good point.
Yeah, so it's a little sticky.
Find a different workaround. You've got to try to do something else.
And we provide a service. We don't provide a product. So on the deposition side, if you need that transcript, or you need that video, you need that edited, whatever, they can hold that hostage sort of
thing. Can I give you an idea?
They have collateral, right? Go ahead.
Do you ever like send an email to a plaintiff's lawyer saying, hey, do you need a loan company to finance your case? Because we ain't it.
I would never be that blunt. I've had some difficult conversations with lawyers over the years. Most of them I know, so this isn't, you know.
You should send them financing. I get these emails every day. Everybody wants to loan me money. I'm like,
yeah.
No, we're doing good. I don't need to pay your. But would you ever suggest that? Would that be too rude for you to say,
no, I wouldn't
hey, do you want to go call these people and then they'll pay us
but
and
I
then
you
pay
you,
them at the end
of
the case?
There are lawyers that will have us send their bill to said company and that company will pay their bills. There are lawyers that use those companies because I see those.
How about just making them prepay? I mean, I know you all say prepay, but y'all don't really afford it.
We don't, and that's a business decision. That's really me.
But some people, you need to prepay.
Some people,
just like with
reporters, have you pay a lot up front, we do not do that.
Right. Just with reporters, I know some people will say, what do you call that, payment on receipt or whatever?
Yeah. Payment in advance or a deposit in advance
or
whatever.
So if you're a person that doesn't pay us, they will do that, especially on the deposition side. So again,
that makes sense.
Yeah, but again, they have collateral they can hold because there's a product you're looking for, right?
Right.
With us, it's like mediation already occurred, arbitration already happened, award's been issued, and here we are.
I'm guessing paid. You'll have that problem if you take depos and then the case settles. People don't pay. That's what I'm guessing. Do you think that?
Do people don't pay?
I'm thinking with
what?
Reporters. With the court reporters, they probably take depos, and then I bet you people don't.
Some
pay.
People do. I talk to my reporter friends, and they have that problem. These reporters are working so hard, and they don't.
Can you imagine not paying your court reporter?
They do
think
all that work for like $1,000. I'm like, thank God you're doing that, and they do. It's such a hard job.
It is, and they're busy. I mean, you know, there's a shortage across the nation.
If we settle, I always call the reporter and say, "Okay, we've settled. What do you want to do?" And they always say, well, I can charge this much and not type it up, or I can type it up and charge this much. I'm like, which one do you want? Well, I'd rather not type it up. I said, okay, whatever, but I'm willing to pay
you
to type it up, because
right.
that's what we hired you to do.
Right.
We're going to pay either one.
Right. Yeah.
Or like if you ask for a rush, you're going to pay more for that.
Absolutely.
You know,
people
you
don't
should.
Get that either.
Yeah, but no, I mean, that's tricky. Yeah, the financial stuff is tricky, but no, most of our clients are amazing.
How long have you been on the Missouri Board of Governors?
So I went off for 2 years. That's why I make that noise.
Good for you.
I was on the Young Lawyer Section Council, went straight to the board, went off for 2 years, and then went back on 18.
Good for you. Are you up for re-election soon?
No, so I don't have to run this year. And last year was the first year we didn't have to run. I think it was because of COVID. I always have to run, and I think we didn't have anybody running against us. So
that's great. Thank you for that service. That's fantastic.
Thank you. It's great.
That's
wonderful. I'm a nerd. I really enjoy it.
Good. It's
fascinating
good work.
What the bar does. Anyone listening, they do. It's tremendous. The services they provide. I mean, we as lawyers are too busy to even bother sometimes to read and figure out what services are out there, but there's tons.
What's the one you want people to know about?
Ooh, well, MOLAC, we already talked about. That's a great one. I would say you could basically, what's it called? Is it called, not, oh gosh, it's like a searching engine, but it's not, I'm thinking CaseNet. I know that's not it. What is it called? Do you guys know? It's provided free, and we just talked about this in our meeting.
Like, for depo?
No, for legal research.
Legal research, and I'm just blanking on what it's called.
I used to use it, and then I went to Westlaw, but it was pretty good. Is it a case?
I'm going to look it up while I'm talking.
It's somewhat when the
law something.
When the copyright on some of these older cases about 10 years ago expired, they scanned a bunch of stuff and started to provide this at a discount rate to compete with LexisNexis and Westlaw. And a lot of people, and I know a lot of lawyers who use them.
Fast case. Sorry, guys. I was blanking.
Fast case. It is a really good service.
That is a good thing to know, because I never even knew that until just this second.
Yeah, and it's not probably as great as Westlaw, but it's provided the bar. We pay for it. And the number that they came up with in our meeting last week, if each individual lawyer that uses it, which would not be you, uses it, it would be over $9 million, the cost. To just use Fast Case. You know what I'm saying? So the bar buys it, but it's obviously substantially less, and it's there for anybody to use.
Well, then the other thing is all the conferences, the Solo and Sauce Firm and all these conferences that are put on to educate and to reach out is fantastic.
Speaking of, don't forget, everybody, to file your CLE.
Yes. Last day is June 30. Anybody needs estate planning CLE, look on the legal services lscm.org website, because we got a great one coming up. Jennifer Crompton, thank you so much for coming and doing these two episodes with us. We really appreciate it. The Lexitas and its predecessor are great companies that offer a lot of services to lawyers in the area. It's just a great resource for us to have to be able to do our litigation work. And so thank you for coming on and visiting with
us.
Thank
you for being here.
Can I do a plug really fast? I know we're at the end.
Another one? Lord, what do you want from us? Lord. Yes, go ahead.
So, she brought us presents.
Go ahead. Hold on. She's bringing out a big, is this going to be long? Go ahead.
No, I'm asking both of you and any of your listeners, we do provide free CLE webinars. I actually am the person that puts those together. I don't know why. I've sort of run out of friends. I joke they stop taking my calls because we've been doing these for years. So
can I speak on one for
that's
you?
That's what I'm asking. If you can speak, that would be great.
Absolutely.
I have a couple of great things I could talk about. Okay. It's all going to be about me. Just kidding.
Well, no, okay. In that case.
No, I hate my pet. You want to know what my pet peeve is? At CLEs where a lawyer gets up and tells a war story about themselves and how great they are the whole time. And you're like, why? I hate those. So when I do CLEs, it's nuts and bolts, teach, give, raise all ships. Here's things you can use in your practice. That's my goal. I can't stand these long, self-serving stories by lawyers.
Well, I like them sometimes, but...
Uh-oh, it's quiet.
I'm just laughing.
Why are you looking at me?
I'm just laughing because we're still being taped, and I'm thinking, that is getting me tickled. I don't know. But it is true. You do not brag on yourself near enough.
But sometimes you have to tell a story to give context to what you're saying. That I appreciate when lawyers
say that. Yeah, you got to give examples, like little stories about that I did today, or like little funny little things, for lessons for people to learn, so...
Yes. But so, yes, if you would like to, please. And we do them for free. It's goodwill.
I'll totally do. I will put me down.
Sounds fun.
I will do it anytime. I love doing. I love teaching people and raising
the ships. What do you want us to teach on? And do you want us together?
You want us to do it together?
That'd be fun. I mean, either way, people ask me a lot if they have to be ADR topics. The answer is no. They happen to be a lot of them just because that's what I do. But no, it can be anything you want to talk about. Most of our clients, you know, and people tuning in are trial lawyers. So
yeah.
How many people do you guys get on a typical CLE? You got like 100 plus?
Yeah. So actually we have one tomorrow. I don't know. Or Wednesday. That's 2 hours of ethics. So we're doing that to give people.
Ooh,
we have a lot of people signed up for that one. That's about, I think, 150 last time.
I do a lot of ethics lectures.
Because you know
too.
People need that. So
I might have. Are you full?
No, it's on Zoom. All right,
so that's our plug. So where do they go if they want to sign up for one of your CLEs or use you guys?
So you can either email me. It's jennifer.crompton@lexitaslegal.com, or our website is lexitaslegal.com, and you can find it there.
Great. All right, everybody.
Have a great one.
Thanks for listening. This has been Lawyer versus Lawyer podcast. Thanks, Debbie.
Thank you, Gary.
Thanks, Jennifer.